Welcome, 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 everybody, to the Hockey Think Tank podcast brought to you by the HockeyThinkTank.com, a website for all players, parents, and coaches to go to get a little bit of education and a little bit of inspiration regarding the greatest game on the planet. Going along with our teammates' mentality, we had Jeff Lurgon on our last episode, which is one of Jeff's teammates, and now we're going to have one of my teammates on, Tyler Rosler, who we will refer to as Tron for the rest of the time because that's what we called him in college. Tyler Rosler is an awesome, awesome guy. Grew up in rural Chatham, Ontario, small town, kind of in central Ontario by the London area. Was a stud there. Came to Cornell as a freshman when I was a senior, and it was tough for him. It was a struggle coming in, and took him a while before he kind of got his feet wet and became the player that he wanted to be. So we have a lot of great conversation when it comes to that. After he played at Cornell, spent a couple years playing overseas before he got into the coaching game, and it was great to talk to him about all the different levels that he's coached at. He coached Junior B hockey in Ontario and Chatham, where he's from. He coached Canadian University in Guelph, and he also coached as a development coach with Windsor in the OHL as well. So a lot of great perspective from Tronner, but before we get to Tron, let's bring in the main man, Jeff Lovecchio. Jeff, how you doing today, man?
Not going to lie to you, Toph, I'm kind of a hurting unit right now.
We're both hurting units, but for different reasons, eh?
Hurting unit, went to Nashville for the NWHO All-Star Weekend with the CBD company that I'm an ambassador for called Veda, because they sponsor the NWHL. And one of my clients, Nicole Hensley, was named to the All-Star game also, so I got to go out there and watch her play. And Nashville got me. First timer in Nashville. I'm obsessed. I love it. I love music. It was an unreal time. And pretty excited because I met some very cool people. And one of those guys is a guy named Ricky Mendez, who we're going to have on the podcast next week, who's an implementation specialist, kind of goes along with, you know, mental coaching and stuff. And just really cool to bump into him randomly and hear him, what he does for a living. And meeting him was so cool. And then I get to come back and talk to you about Tronner here. And this guy is on like the same wavelength as us. And it's just been like firing on all cylinders here the past few days. And I never met Tronner, but like he said in our podcast, he almost came to Western, decided on Cornell instead. I think that's a huge mistake, but what do I know?
I'm just a doctor.
I'm just a doctor. Happy Gilmore, what's up? Yeah, he's a great guy, man. Good episode. I loved what he was having to say at the end of the podcast. Like, just everything you and I are about. Good stuff. I'm happy that he's coaching.
Yeah, he's awesome. And a little bit of shout out to Cornell here too. They won another Ivy League championship this Saturday. They're on fire. And it's been really cool to watch because they've battled a ton of injuries this year. You know, last year they won the Ivy Leagues for a time. They were number one in the country, but didn't have to battle a ton of the injury bug adversity that most teams do. This year they're getting hit hard. But guys are stepping up, playing different roles and getting a certain amount of ice time, and it's been really cool to watch. But it did suck because Friday night I went there, it was actually alumni weekend, and then Saturday and yesterday, we're recording this on a Monday, both my wife and I, total flu. And watching a two-year-old when both parents have the flu is not fun. I can tell you that much. So I've been a hurting unit too, but did want to say congrats to all the boys at Cornell and the coaching staff as well for another job well done. But obviously Ivy League is just one of the championships that they want to win, and hopefully they can get a couple more.
Well, I want to take a second to congratulate Western. On what? I'm not sure. I don't know what they did this weekend, but
they were
since
off.
We're giving shout outs, then I know that they had a great time because I know how fun Western is. No, I have no idea what Western did, but since you're going to pump your tires. I'll pump Westerns too.
Oh, I like it. But yeah, a lot of awesome stuff with Tron here. I mean, he's the kind of guy, and you talked about it with Lurgy. Like, I think some of the feedback that we've gotten from people that listen is they love to hear stories about kind of guys that had to persevere through a lot of different stuff. And Tron is a 5'6", 5'7" player. And also he had to struggle a lot in college before he kind of figured it out. And so talking to him about kind of like what it's like to play for a tough coach and what it's like to go through those tough times and what it's like to, you know, fit into a team and stuff like that. I mean, I thought it was really, really valuable stuff for a lot of the kids to hear and a lot of great lessons. Yeah, Tron, I mean, he's big time, man. He's big time.
Well, too, I mean, it's just good to hear that because, you know, being in the youth hockey world now, I see so much of parents and players where they just think that it's just always going to be easy. Oh, well, I'm good, so, like, I should just score every game. Or I should just make a junior A team in the USHL. Or I should just – I'll play D1. It's like, without work? No. And without adversity? No. Like, you need those things. And hearing him talk about the adversity he went through his first few years in college and then having better second 2 years, I mean, it was really cool to hear that stuff. And then you hear him talk now, and it's like, well, he talked about how now he gets it. And it's easier for him to convey to kids how to beat adversity and how adversity can help you and use it to fuel you and inspire you and motivate you because he went through it just like you did, just like I did. So we need more ex-players to come back and get into coaching, you know, the youth levels to instill this in the kids. It's okay to fail. It's okay to have things, you know, happen because then what do? You learn from them and then you make yourself better. It's okay, parents, your kids are going to go through bumps in the road. Let them. Don't baby them too much. Don't call the coach. Make them call the coach. Like, adversity is the best thing your kids can have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And with that, let's bring it over to Tyler Rosler, the Tron man. We are so excited to have on this episode of the podcast one of my former teammates at Cornell University, Tyler Rosler, from little rural small town Chatham, Ontario, in central Ontario, right by the London area. Tronner, what's going on today?
What's happening, Tope?
Not too much, man, not too much. We talked last night. Your little baby girl's got the flu. How's she doing?
Yeah, she's got the flu. She seemed to catch it. But, she won't eat food, but we got her on plenty of liquid, so... Hopefully we don't catch it like you guys caught it.
Yeah, I've been it's been a tough couple days at the Scott household with myself and my wife kind of on the let's just say it wasn't a fun weekend having to watch a 2-year-old and have the flu both of us at the same time. But at the end of the day, we're getting through it here. It's like the Michael Jordan sick game trying to get through this podcast, but we're freaking getting her done. So Tronard. First question I wanted to ask you, buddy, was, from a small town in Ontario, Chatham, Ontario, I always thought that kind of like the hockey story, small town Ontario into high-level hockey has always been pretty cool. So if you can, just talk to us a little bit first how you got your start into hockey and how it kind of shaped you growing up in a small town in central Ontario.
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in Chatham, and I was pretty lucky. My father had played, he actually played at Cornell as well. Having that mentor growing up, I had two brothers, we were all in travel hockey. So it was a busy household for sure. And, right away I was on skates when I was two and, kind of played all the way up here in Chatham. And, it's a small town. Like you said, it's, we had AAA, but, we were drawing from, a 50,000, person community. So it wasn't a huge place, but, great place to grow up. A lot of good players kind of coming out of Southwestern Ontario. So, it was highly competitive, but we, like you guys talk a lot about in the podcast, we played all sports, kind of until we got to high school. And that's really when I focused just on hockey. Cause you had to kind of make that decision at that point, but yeah, growing up, try to stay as athletic as possible. And, we were lucky to have my dad kind of coach us all the way up and, have that mentor. So it was pretty neat growing up, with that.
That's awesome, man. And you actually had a similar experience to me in the fact that you got to play junior hockey in your hometown. So what was that like?
Yeah, I mean, growing up, that's what you watched. And kind of at that time, there seemed to be, you know, five or six guys that were getting Division I scholarships every year from the team. They had a really good team. And so growing up, watching that and then getting a chance to play. And this was back in the time, you know, in Canada when there was no 16-year-old rule. So you could play junior hockey as early as you wanted. So I actually started when I was in grade 9. That was kind of the norm back then was the, you know, the if you could play with the older guys, get used to that. So, but no, it was a great, great experience. I was fortunate to play on, you know, we won a couple championships. So that was pretty neat to see the, you know, the city rally around that. And, you know, ultimately that's where I got, you know, my start with the U.S. colleges. So, but yeah, I mean, great, great opportunity. I always find the guys that are playing in their hometown, they have a different, passion and pride for the team because they understand the tradition and the culture that came with it.
That's awesome, man. No, that's cool. I really enjoyed playing in Chicago, being a hometown, a little bit different. The fact that it's, like Chicago. So it's like the 90th biggest thing to do and was to come see a Chicago Steel game as opposed to Chatham, Ontario, where probably like the whole crowd's coming and, you know, everybody kind of knows everybody. And I got the chance, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, but got the chance to come up and watch you coach a couple games up there when you were coaching the Chatham team. So it was kind of cool to see everybody kind of knowing everybody and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, you had an unbelievable junior hockey career. You had over 100 points your last year before you came to Cornell where we were teammates. And, you know, this is kind of where the conversation gets a little bit interesting because you didn't have especially a great start to your college career. And I would probably venture a guess to say that you would want to do some things differently, especially towards the beginning of it. And, you know, we mentioned on the introduction to the podcast that it was alumni weekend. So got the chance to see some of our former teammates that we played with and stuff and get a few stories, some PG rated stories anyway about you coming in.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things that I wanted to ask you, you know, regarding coming into school was as a freshman, I think it's important for a lot of kids to hear this. I don't think, or I would like to hear what you thought of your first impression when you got to Cornell in terms of the first impression that you thought you made with, you know, the other guys on the team. And talk to us a little bit about, you know, coming to Cornell, very highly touted coming out of juniors, and just kind of like your first little bit at Cornell and the first impression that you thought you made with us as a team.
Yeah, absolutely. No, great question, Toph. Yeah. So, I mean, I was, you know, fortunate to have a pretty good last year at junior, and I was talking to a few teams and we were talking off air. It actually came down between Western Michigan and Cornell for where I was going to go. So Jeff and I, we were laughing. We could have been teammates. He could have been my captain. Instead, I got you, Toast. So
yeah, that sucks.
I think
tough trade-off.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, obviously I grew up, you know, we go to Cornell every year. My father played there, so I knew a ton about Cornell hockey. And when they came knocking, it was tough to turn that down. So yeah, ultimately I committed there, and coming in, I think, you know, the expectations from talking to the coaching staff, and I think, you know, most junior players, you think that you're going to come in and try to be an impact right away and play, you know, top six, top nine forward spot and some power play. And, when I came in, and I think it's also a more difficult transition for the guys that haven't lived away from home before. You know, we had obviously, you know, played in my hometown, which is great, but I think, you know, getting used to living on your own and that kind of thing, I think is good before you head off to university and get used to, you know, doing that kind of thing. But, yeah, I mean, I was really excited. We had a big freshman class that I came in with. We had 8 guys come in, and, yeah, I was just wowed at, you know, the level of professionalism, how hard guys worked and, how serious they took it. And, yeah, like, I mean, for me, it, you know, and then I get healthy scratched in my first game, and I was kind of in and out, of the lineup. It seemed like in that first half before Christmas time. And, it was a difficult time because it was, you know, a big transition, moving away from home and then really for the first time in your life, you're getting healthy scratch. You're in and out of games when you expected to be, and the expectations were that you would come in and make an impact. So that was definitely a tough period, the first half of that first year for sure.
Do you think that was because you had such high expectations placed on you by the team or by yourself, the level was just better? Like, what do you think some of the reasons were for that?
I think for me, it was, I had to learn how to play the right way and consistently. And for a smaller player, a smaller offensive player, if the offense maybe isn't there one night, you're going to have to find different ways that you can contribute. And I think, for the first time, really, it was, you weren't getting offensive minutes. You were coming in, you're playing on the third and fourth line. How can you contribute? How can you bring energy, play more of a grit role? Especially at that time, because it was a money in the bank program, meaning, if two players are even, the guy that's been there longer is going to play. And, that was kind of, and you just work your way up and try to play your best hockey as a senior. So, no, I think for me, I just, the consistency and what I needed to do to be an effective player at that level, I didn't do it on a consistent basis. And I think that's just something you learn. Like a lot of the young players that come into, higher levels of hockey, they think that they know the game. They think they have work ethic. And then you find out, what you have to do to be effective and perform on a consistent basis.
I have a question then for you, looking back, because I run a off-ice training company here in St. Louis, and I train a lot of junior players and guys that are going from juniors to college or from midgets to juniors and stuff like that. And what I see is pretty much this exact situation. These guys will go from being the first line guy on their midget AAA team, scoring 50 goals a year, but then you make a jump to the USHL or the NAHL, and that's a hard jump. And they'll be on the fourth line to start the year, and immediately I can tell in their voice when I talk to them on the phone, their self-confidence is low. Their confidence in their game is low. And I try and prepare them to go into that situation. Like, look, you just have to excel at whatever role you're given, and then you get more rope and hopefully you keep moving up. Like, what kind of advice would you give to those players? Like, looking back, what would you have done differently going into that freshman year?
Yeah. I think for me, like similar to you, Jeff, like growing up when I was in high school, I mean, my mentality was I'm going to do everything I can off the ice from a nutrition side, from a workout plan side of things to get extra ice, all these things. That's what got me to Cornell. And like, I'm not a big guy. Tope knows, like I'm 5'6", 5'7". So I had to do those things, to give myself every edge that I could. And I think when I went to Cornell, I kind of lost that a little bit, right? You're going through your transition, you lose it. And then you're worried about sometimes doing what the popular, the cool thing would be to do rather than just stick to what got you there. Right. So I think for me, the biggest thing that happened to me and what changed, my fate at Cornell was, whether I thought the coaching staff was right or wrong for what they thought, it's what they thought. And ultimately they're the decision makers. So I had to figure out, I had to get back to my ways, doing the extra, doing all these things that helped get me there. And also, get used to, just going in there and not making it about myself. I think the best thing that I did was I went in there and it took, it was years. It was a progression and just trying to go into the coaching staff in a non-confrontational way and just say, hey, like, how can I help this team win? I want to help us win. What do you need to see from me on a more consistent basis so that I can contribute for this team every night? And when I really took ownership of that and I said, okay, whether I agree with it or not, this is what needs to happen. So if I don't do this, I'm not going to play. And I think just having that open communication with your coaching staff to find those answers out. And then, like I said, you have to consistently compete and do the things that they're looking for. And that'd be my biggest
reaction.
Piece of advice.
When you went into their office and you say those things, what was their, what did they come back with you and tell you?
Yeah. I mean, they were very receptive, but I mean, that took a couple of years for me to understand that. Right. Because, as a player, they told you were going to be this great player and ultimately the onus has to go on the player. But for me, I was like, you know, I didn't really agree with what they were saying sometimes. And so I kind of almost try to battle that with them and try to understand it rather than just saying, you know what, this is what they feel as coaching. And I get it so much more being on the coaching side now, but, and I, they just laid it out for me. These are the things that you need to do, you know, three or four things that you need to do. You know, you need to stay even, you need to win battle. You do this on a consistent basis, your role will continue to evolve. So I literally just simplified it, started with those three things and just tried, you know, and my games were practices back then. That's the other thing. You have to treat, when you're in those type of environments, when you go to the USHL or you go to college for the first time or the Ontario Hockey League, and you're maybe not playing your games or your practices. So you have to prepare that way. And yeah, I mean, just simplify your game, figure out the things that they want to see and go with it. Because I think, you know, as coaches now looking at it, if a player came with that level of maturity and laid it out and not made it about himself, but more about the team and how can I help the team win, they'll tell you the things you need to do. Then ultimately it's up to you to do them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to follow up with that. Kind of gave it to you a little bit there, but I want to like actually turn the tables and talk about me for a second, because it was funny. I was talking with Mike and Joe Devin, who were your classmates that were in town for alumni weekend. And it was really funny because we were kind of joking and stuff, and they were kind of like calling me a hard ass as a captain when you guys came in as freshmen and I was a senior. And I was kind of like, I wouldn't say taken aback, because like I was kind of mandated by the coaching staff. Like we had some off ice issues the year before that. So they were kind of like, you guys need to put the hammer down on these guys. Like we can't have any more issues. Like if you guys see anything, like squash it right away or whatever. And that's kind of not really my style, but that's kind of like what I thought I needed to do. So I was very similar in the fact that like I wasn't myself that entire year trying to be that, you know, that version of that leader. So kind of almost like evaluate as a freshman coming in, like me as a captain, because I honestly don't think I did the best job because I wasn't authentic and genuine in a lot of the stuff that I was doing in terms of handling some of this stuff. So like, what were kind of your impressions of me and the other kind of guys in the leadership group coming in?
Yeah, I think it's exactly what we were talking about, right? Like people can tell if it comes natural to you. So from, you know, and I know you guys have talked about this on the podcast, but when you become a leader, the worst thing that you can do is become someone who you're not, right? You need to be genuine and you need to do, you know, whether you're a leader, you know, by example, whether you're a vocal guy, just do what that is, because that's what got you voted as captain in the first place, right? So I think for us, like, yeah, it was, you know, being, like you said, kind of being hard on the guys and, you know, and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I would agree with that. I think the one thing, Toph, is that no one would ever argue with was that you did lead by example. You competed and no one ever was concerned if you didn't want it, you know, the most. And I think as a leader, that's the most important quality, is that, you know, you got to be the hardest worker in practice. You have to be setting the tone every day. And even though, you know, maybe in the dressing room and these kind of things, you kind of lost yourself a little bit and you became someone who you weren't, at least you still had that backing of your play. And ultimately, I think as a leader, that's what's most important. And it happens to a lot of people when they become captains for the first time is, you know, they're not, maybe let's say they're not a vocal, all of a sudden they got to be a vocal guy. And then they're trying to kind of push for, you know, ways to kind of intervene as a leader where, you know what I mean? If they just stick true to who they are, and like Ray, like, so Toast co-captain was Ray Sawada, who was a 6'4", you know, intimidating presence. And he didn't talk a ton, but when he talked, it was like, you know, you listened, right? So Toph, you know, had that. So I think like, if you had to do it again, you probably would have, you know, just been yourself and like, kind of like take the younger guys under their wing kind of approach, and lead like it's with your compete level, you know, and let kind of Ray do all the other, you know, kind of more of the vocal stuff, because you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like, you had to do it again, that's probably what you would do.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a great learning experience. Yeah. And like thinking back about it now and, you know, getting into coaching and all that kind of stuff, like it's, I think it's a really, really valuable lesson to learn. Just that, like that authenticity and that fulfillment of like being the best version of yourself. Like there's nothing better. And when, again, like when you, people know when you're a phony, you know, people know when you're not being you. And that's like the worst thing that you can do as a player or as a coach or a person, you know, that's a part of a team. It just, I think it's so important to bring the best version of yourself. Jeff, do you have any thoughts on that one as well?
Yeah, you know, we talked about that recently on one of these where, you know, you just be authentic, be yourself. And it goes with everything in the game. It's not just in the locker room. It's not just your personality, how you fit in with the team. It's on the ice too. Like, obviously you want to always be trying things and always be learning and always be growing. But, you know, when you get to those higher levels, you know, we're talking mainly about Division I here. You also got to know who you are on the team and what your role is. So, you know, you could be a skill guy, but you're a freshman. You're not playing a lot. You're on the fourth line. Well, the fourth line is supposed to be the energy line for that team, you know, if your coach says that. And your job is to do this. So at the bare minimum, you got to do what you're asked as that fourth line role. And then if you get in situations where now you can use your skill, you use it. And that's like what I'm talking about when I was asking you, you know, what would you do differently? Because it seems like a lot of guys, you know, when you're younger, the best guys are always mainly, you know, guys putting up points and all that stuff. But then you go to that next level and it's harder to put up points. Every level you go up, it's harder and harder. So you have to know your role, be the best at it, and then you get more, you know, rope. And it's the same thing in the locker room. Know your role within the locker room. If you're a young guy, oh, Toph, we haven't talked about this, but I wanted to. If you're a young guy, do not get in the front of the line when you're a rookie for food. That stuff drives me nuts. Like, I'm all about everyone on the team being equal, but I was always taught respect, you know? So again, know your role. You're a young guy. You wait till the older guys get up and get their food. I still believe in that stuff. Just like I believe in chivalry, open the door for women. Like, same thing. That's just a respect thing. Like, you should respect your older teammates. They've been there. They know, they've done it. They've proved it. You're the new guy. You wait for them to go eat. Yeah. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Is that old school or is that?
No, I don't think that's old school at all. No. One of the things that we used to talk about was like, you know, as a freshman coming in or as a rookie, you know, you're not expected to pick up the pucks. We want everybody to pick up the pucks, but you better pick up the pucks. You know what I mean? You're like, you're not required to get the water down for practices and stuff, but you better be on your game and you better be, you know, a guy that's bringing down the water and doing those little things. So I don't know, Tronner, would you agree with that?
Oh, for sure. And I just want to go back to just one thing that Jeff said there before is, you know, finding a way to contribute, right? And I think going through that adversity when you come in as a freshman and you got to find a way to contribute in different ways than maybe you have been your whole life, right, Jeff? Like, you have this offensive player who's now coming in and he's got to play on a fourth line. He's got to figure out how he can create energy and do all these things. And I think looking back on kind of, you know, my career as a coach now, I think that's made me a better coach because I can relate to the guy that has to find a way to contribute on the fourth line. I can relate to every type of player because I had to go through that as a player, right? And when you learn to do that, and I find the guys that have a really tough time with it are the guys that are trying to figure that out in pro for the first time. Yeah. You know, these guys that come in highly touted, they play top two lines, and now all of a sudden they're trying to break into the NHL, and it's like, you know, you can't play that role. Like, I look at Kasperi Kapanen for the Leafs right now. Like, there's a guy that's a smaller offensive player, but if they need that guy to play on the fourth line, with his speed and grit, he can do that, right? But if when you look at a guy like, you know, like Nylander or someone who's a little bit more one-dimensional, if your offensive game isn't there, you're not bringing a whole lot to the table. So I just think going through adversity and finding ways to contribute to your team is such a valuable lesson that you need to learn. And it helped me as a player, and it's helped me even more as a coach being able to relate to different kids on the team.
Man, I wish you had a megaphone to make that even louder. That was money. I believe in that so much. And you know, I Boston, you know, I'm not going to throw any names out there, but like when I was at Boston, a lot of the Dub boys coming from the WHL, you know, they were, you know, their shit didn't stink where they were coming for. They're coming from the Dub. Everybody knew who they were. And we had guys coming to camp over 10% body fat, and they wouldn't even let them step on the ice. Right. And again, like, you got to know you're a rookie coming in. You're not Phil Kessel. You're not allowed to eat 20 hot dogs a day and still snipe 40 goals in the league. Like, you have done nothing. You need to come in like in the role that you're coming in. You're a rookie. You have to show everyone what you can do. And you know, then they would translate down to the American League. We go down to the American League, and if they weren't playing a first or second line role, always like bitching about it and like, oh, I can't get points, I can't do that. And it's like, in my head, I'm like, God, I'm just like so happy to be here. And I played all four lines. There were nights I'd play first line. There were nights I'd play fourth line. And I, like whatever it was, I knew, okay, first line, I got to make some plays. Fourth line, all I got to do is get it deep, be a plus, finish hits, block shots. Like you need to know that right. stuff. And like you just said, those guys struggling for the first time at pro, I think it was really hard for them. Because they had never hit that adversity. So for any kids listening to this, any coaches listening to this, adversity is a good thing. And coaches, you need to stress that to your teams. Because when Absolutely. A kid's going through adversity, like they're not thinking, oh, this is so hard, but oh, I know this will make me better in the end. They're just thinking, this is so hard. Why am I struggling? I'm not Right. helping the team. I'm not getting scouted. So as coaches, I've found that when I go to a kid and say, hey, I know you're struggling right now. Trust me. Keep doing what you're doing. Believe in the process. Keep getting better every day. This adversity you're going through now, I 100% guarantee will make you a better player and a better person in a week, in a month, in a year from now. Because you're going to go through adversity the rest of your life, and learning to deal with it now is massive and crucial. So I love that you said that.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
That's interesting too. And I'll even take it a step further from like a scouting recruiting side. And Tron, you did this with your junior team and maybe to another extent when you coach in Canadian college. When we're out there scouting, like we needed kids to have what we called a B game, right? So the B game is like just like what you guys were talking about. So when the points aren't coming, you know, it's not the offensive side of the game. It's the compete side of the game. It's the, you know, the grind side of the game. It's the back check. It's the blocking shots. It's all that kind of stuff that doesn't show up on the score sheet because of just what we're talking about. You know, there's only so many spots on a team for offensive roles. So when you're not in that offensive role, just like I said, like what else can you bring to the team? So if all you can do is play offense and you don't care about your end and you don't work hard and you don't care about the little sacrifice plays and you don't have a B game, like let's say you're not one of the top six. What are you going to bring the team? Probably nothing. You're probably going to be sitting in the stands.
Right.
So I think it's important for kids to hear that, like that compete side, that stuff that we're talking about, that's going to earn you ice time. And that might get you even a spot on a team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think for me, it was, you know, it was there's a lot of minor hockey and junior players that listen to this podcast, right. And they're trying to get a scholarship or they're trying to get drafted to the Ontario Hockey League, you know, and do these things. And it's a stressful time. I can remember, you know, I wanted it so bad. And I knew that in the junior league that I played in, I had to put up 2 points at least every game to be able to get recruited. And I can remember struggling with that. Like it was a lot of pressure that I would bring into these games. And I remember the best advice that I got from my dad at the time was he said, if you do everything that you can do to help your team win, everything individually will take care of itself. And it's simple and you may have heard it before, but I'm telling you, it was the best thing that I did as a player. And it's the same message that I reiterate to my players that I coach now is, you know, these guys want it so bad. And you got these guys that are, that want it and they're doing this. And a lot of times it can bring a lot of stress and pressure to the game where they know, hey, if you're an offensive player, hey, I have to score tonight. Well, it's like, you know what, just do every little thing that you can do to help your team win. And I promise you, everything scoring wise, individually, all that stuff will take care of itself. And you don't have the burden of going into games and putting so much pressure on yourself to say that I have to do this. And what do you know, Toph, when you go to a game and you see a kid playing that hard, it ends up working out in your favor anyway, because teams want guys that are going to compete at both ends. They want guys that are going to, you know, they want guys that can win, right? And help their team win. So I think that was kind of the best advice that I ever got. And it helped me so much as a player, and it's a message that I constantly reiterate to my players now.
That's a phenomenal message, and that resonates with me so much because I have a kid on my team, on my 18s midget major team here in St. Louis, who's a phenomenal player. But he sometimes thinks about the result, like you're saying, the goal. Right. He's thinking about, I have to get points. I have to get points. Scouts want to see points. But when he – and I know in the game right away when he's thinking that way, I can tell because he starts to cheat the game just a little bit. He starts to go a little bit past his check, hoping the puck will get stopped behind him and somebody will chip it off the glass. And those are the games where he doesn't score. And then he gets more frustrated. So I just keep saying to him, look, when you focus on the little things, the little details, those are the games you always wind up scoring and having multi-point games and all this stuff. You can't focus on that result. If you focus on, like you said, doing those little things, the right way to play, the things that are going to help your team win, that's when the result you want happens. When you cheat, you're taking out that step of doing the right things, and that's the most important step to get you to that result.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Good. Your dad's a smart man.
That Jeff Rosler, wise man. But Trotter, I wanted to kind of go back to a little bit what we were talking about because between the three of us, you know, you and I played for the same college coach and Jeff played for a guy in junior hockey that were hard coaches to play for at times. Like guys that, you know, were going to hold you accountable no matter what. Guys that were hard on you. Guys that got into you. And kind of what was that like for you? And you know, give us some advice for some of the players out here that are listening, you know, in terms of playing for a hard coach and kind of having to deal with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the hardest coach I ever played for was Coach Schaefer at Cornell. I mean, you guys had him on the podcast. I mean, he is old school. He is, you know, you got to bring your work boots and you're going to work. Right. And I think for me, and that's why I think it took even longer for me to really break in and be a consistent player at Cornell is because I really had to learn that. Right. And, but the one thing that, you know, that I do know is at Cornell, we always erred on the side of doing too much. And, you know, there's so many kids that, you know, you look back and, you know, like our Spitfire kids in the OHL last year, you know, if we had over a 50 minute practice, these guys are like, hey, you know, we got to rest our legs and, you know, we're getting tired. And it's like, guys, like you guys are in a development phase of your career right now. We need to work and develop. You're not in the NHL where you're playing 82 games and, you know, you're just fine tuning things. Like we're in a development mode right now. Like we need to be like you, we had a coach that was coaching with us that played with Rasmus Dahlin over in Frölunda. And they said that guy is 9 to 5 at the rink. Like he is there, he's skating twice a day. He's working out, he's watching video. He's eating, all the meals are brought to the rink. Like this guy is dialed in. And like, I mean, obviously he's not doing that in Buffalo now, but I mean, that's what it took to get there. And you hear stories of Crosby and Taze and these guys, when they went to Shattuck St. Mary's, they were playing on like two or three different teams. They were on the ice two or three times a day. You know, they had their workouts built right into their schedule for them. I mean, that is what it takes if you want, you know, to get a Division I scholarship and give yourself a chance to play pro. And I think that's what I learned at Cornell was this is an all the time thing. Like you have to, from your nutrition to your rest, to your workouts, to your practices. I mean, we'd be on the ice sometimes for, you know, 3 hours. You know, with skill sessions before, 2 hour practice. But the thing that I learned, Coach Schaefer was organized. He demanded a ton from his players and you needed to compete consistently. And I think, I mean, we talked about this all the time and people like to talk about it a lot, but it is so true is that it is a learned ability to be able to compete consistently. And you bring that into your professional career. You bring that into whatever job you go to. And I mean, you learned that from playing from tough coaches that were demanding. And sometimes you didn't like them, but you always respected them and you always knew they were doing what was in the best interest of the team. But, you know, I think those guys that were consistently competitive and worked all the time, I mean, those were the guys that always ended up making it. Like I look at the three best players, you know, probably that I played with at Cornell, like Ben Scrivens, like for the goalies that are listening to this, like Ben Scrivens, he would not let any pucks in practice in the net. Like, you know, coaches push the pucks in the net. Like if we're doing breakouts and stuff, no. Like they're going in the bucket because he was so competitive. He did not even want any pucks in his net. And
I love that.
Yeah. Oh, and you know what, if you get used to that mentality, you're not letting pucks in a game. And, you know, he ends up playing for the Leafs and, has a long career. Riley Nash was a guy that Toph knows. He was in my freshman class, and this guy came in first rounder. And I'm telling you, you took the puck away from this guy in practice, and he was going to give it to you because he wanted that puck so bad. And he was the most competitive guy I've ever seen. You know, and all this stuff is practice things, but you know what? They translated. They were the most competitive in games. Last one was Colin Greening. Unbelievable. He played for Ottawa, the Senators for a bit. He played with the Leafs. He's a captain of the Marlies now. And this guy was a full out professional. And this guy, I mean, I remember in preseason, we would split up into two teams and we'd kind of play a game every Friday. Toph would remember this. And I remember the year that we won the ECAC championship, my junior year, him and Brendan Nash went toe to toe, and the coach, to the point where the coaches had to come in, you know, they had heard what had happened. They said, listen, like, you guys need to dial it down. You're on the same team. And usually the coach has to kind of dial it up. The guys aren't working hard enough because you don't play games for a couple weeks. But I mean, the most consistent competitive guys I've ever seen. And this is bred through demanding coaches and guys. But I mean, if you want to continue to make it, whether it's in coaching or playing, you got to demand a lot of your guys, and you got to be consistently competitive all the time.
Dude, I remember that fight because I was back training because I was playing pro at the time, and I remember Nasher and Greener throw. That's one of the best fights I've honestly ever seen, and it was like
ever
a preseason scrimmage.
Yep.
That was like they were chucking them. Like, it was an unbelievable fight. Thank God neither of them got hurt. But yeah, I remember as a freshman coming in, and like we're doing one of those preseason skates or whatever, and there was like a scrum in the corner, and there were like six guys in the scrum and just absolutely getting after it and going after each other. And like guys on the bench are getting up like, yeah, get them, you know? Yeah. And I'm like, wow, okay, this is Cornell hockey. That was unbelievable. I'm glad you had a similar experience than I did.
And that was our edge at Cornell, right? Like, you talk, I don't know if you ever played Cornell, but that was, I think you talked about it on one of the podcasts. Like, and that's the way we trained in the weight room. That's the way we trained on the ice. And the camaraderie amongst the guys was phenomenal culture at Cornell, still is. And that's why we were successful. And that was all bred from our coach.
I like something you said there, Tronner. I like that you said you have to constantly be competing. And it sounds so easy to say that, but it's not. You also talked about habits, and it is a habit, a very important habit, to be constantly competing. Cause you know, I can tell within the first practice without knowing any of these kids when I'm coaching, like, who are the best players on the team, because every single drill they're competing the same way. They're constantly wanting to win or wanting to score or not wanting to be scored on. And they're battling all the time. And then there might be kids who are more skilled than them, but I know as they get older, I'm like, all right, you're not going to make it because you don't have this in you. You're not constantly wanting to battle. And if you don't have that, like, it doesn't matter how skilled you are. It doesn't matter. You're not going to make it. So you always got to be, I tell them, like, I hate losing. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. Drink coffee the fastest. Eat a sandwich the fastest. I don't care what it is. Lifting weights, running, scoring, playing hockey. I want to effing win at everything I do. And those are the people that I want to surround myself with. When I was a captain, when I was a teammate, and building cultures, and as a coach, I want people who constantly hate losing and love winning.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, Toph, you said it too, is compete level is on a spectrum, right? And I believe, because I found it true for myself, is it can be learned too. There's the guys that are naturally competitive, and then there's the other guys that through coaching, through learning how to be competitive, it brings that out in you. And I think that's what the Cornell environment did. But for the guys that maybe think, you know, like, there's more competitive guys on my team, maybe there's guys that want it more. I mean, it's just, like you said, it can be learned, but I mean, it is hard work and it's an all the time thing. And then if you work at it for long enough, it eventually becomes a habit for you. But I mean, it takes a lot of work and paying attention to those types of things, whether it's body language or, you know, how you're working in practice, how you're preparing for practices and games, you know, all those things, you know, how you do anything is how you do everything. You got to kind of hone that concept, and you can really grow your competitiveness if you want to, and if you're aware of it.
You just dropped a knowledge truth bomb. How you do anything is how you do everything. I am stealing that. I love that. Totally true. I believe in habits. I believe in just I right there. How you do anything is how you do everything. I'm getting that tattooed on me. I love that.
I'll join you. We'll get them. We'll both get them.
Perfect. I like it. Well, Tron, I want to go back to something that you were talking about earlier too, because I think this is a very, very interesting and important topic. And that is, you know, like when, like you think you're doing too much, like, you know what I mean? So like the coach is making you do an X, Y, and Z, and you guys think that it's too much, because I've actually, did a team building thing with the team this year. And one of the things that we do is I kind of sit around and I kind of listen to them talk, and that came up, and it was, I kind of called them out on it. You know, they were like, I think, you know, sometimes practices are too hard and lifts and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, no, first of all, do you know what the Patriots did the first practice after they came back? After they won the AFC Championship game before the Super Bowl, they put all their pads on and they went after it and they competed hard, you know? And it's such like a mindset thing. And like, I think we've all been there. We've all been there where maybe the coach is pushing you too hard or you feel like you don't have legs or whatever. So you kind of complain a little bit, but thinking about it now, like that's such like a bad mindset to have. Like you need to have a mindset that like, okay, coach is pushing. I got to get through this. Let's do this. I got to get through this. Yeah. Like having a positive attitude towards it. And maybe he is pushing you too hard. You never know. And physically, maybe you are being pushed a little bit past your limit, but at the end of the day, your mindset is so much more important than that. And if he is pushing you too hard, instead of complaining about it, go to the coach and say, hey coach, you know what? I think maybe we need a rest day or something like that. So like, what do you think about that? Cause I think it's such a mindset thing. It's so much more important than any of the kind of physical stature that you may have.
It is for sure. And I mean, this might be the most important thing, for the difference of the guys that make it and not, you know, I've seen it through to in myself and I've seen it in players that I've coached. And, you know, I think this is the most important thing is that you need to have no regrets when you're done the game. You need to know that you put every ounce into everything that you could do, because the game now, I mean, these guys, it's not just on the ice, it's in the weight room, it's your nutrition, it's your sleep, it's all these things, right? And they all affect it. It's your how you think, it's your attitude, it's your mental toughness. And for me, I know that if I was going to be successful at 5'6", I had to do everything in my power to make myself as successful as I could be so that I could look back at my career and say, you know what? I gave it everything that I had, and I gave myself the best chance to be successful. So for me, my motto was always err on the side of doing too much, not enough, right? So for me, especially in these development years, and these kids are in minor hockey or they're in junior, you know, before they get to pro, it changes when you're in pro, but in college, I mean, you need to be on, like, you need to err on the side of doing too much, because at the end of the day, if you're a little tired, at least your skills are that much more developed. Your body is that much more developed. And over time, you can kind of fine tune that. But I just think in order for you to sit here at the end of the day and say, I gave myself the best chance, you have to err on the side of doing too much. And you have to look for every edge that you can gain, because there's so many guys that want it just as bad as you do and want the same things that you want. And I mean, that's something that you got to have a plan. I mean, I remember, you know, at Cornell, they used to make us write down our weekly plan, everything from when our classes were to when we were going to lift to when we were going to practice to the skills that we were going to work on. We used to have these cue cards, every player had a cue card in their stall, and we would have three things. And those were drills that we did every day. And you'd grab two or three guys before practice, after practice, and you would work on them. And you got to have a plan, and you can't be worried about not doing enough. You got to just err on the side of doing too much.
Well, when you have that mindset too, recovery is huge. And when you're younger like that, your body definitely does bounce back a lot faster. So if you take recovery seriously,
right,
you will be able to work more, work longer, work harder, because you've recovered correctly. And that means, you know, mindfulness, keeping your stress levels down, because your stress ruins your body, both good stress and bad stress, eustress and distress. Sleeping right, nutrition, drinking water. And it's like, all right, if you just want to work hard on the ice and that's all you care about, you're not trying to be the best you, that's a good start. But if you want to be the best you, or you're trying to make it to that next level, whether it's from AA to AAA or AAA to juniors, juniors to college, like, find every edge you can. And like Tron said, now it's nutrition, it's sleep, it's this, it's that. So like, follow what everybody, look up Tom Brady. Look at what that guy's done. There's a reason he's won like he has. If you read about what his daily routines are, they are insane. But that's what he has had to do to become, you know, the best quarterback of all time, probably, because he takes such good care of his body that he's able to work harder. He's able to work longer.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Tom Brady, the GOAT. I love it. Well, Tronner, we've had you on here for a little bit now, and you know, wanted to ask you one more question, because, you know, you've kind of stayed in the hockey game after you were a player. Yep. and have coached at a lot of different levels. You know, you've been an assistant coach and a head coach in Junior B in your hometown. You've coached Canadian University. You've been a development coach at the OHL level as well. Like, we do have a lot of young players that listen, but we also have a lot of young aspiring coaches that listen to the podcast as well. So what's some advice, or what are some things that you can kind of tell some young aspiring coaches, and like, what are the biggest lessons that you've learned being on the other side of the bench now after being a player?
Yeah, great question. I think it's funny, because it's almost the same, you know, the same kind of points as a player as it is for a coach. It's just a little bit different in terms of, you know, how you can kind of, how you do that. But I mean, you got to have passion. You got to constantly be learning. Like, we talk about this all the time. Like, when I got done playing, I went and I would advise this for any young coaches, is go out there, whether there's OHL practices or USHL or Division I, whatever, go out and watch practices. Guys that are, that you've heard have done a good job or at a higher level than you. Cause that's where you're going to get the ideas from. And I think for me, I try to think about, you know, my coaching philosophy, and I try to take little thing from every coach that I've had, and then every, guy that I've coached with, and try to, you know, create your own coaching philosophy on what you're going to be all about. But you have to be ever learning, you know, going out and watching practices. I was fortunate, before I worked for Windsor, when I was in Guelph, I used to watch Rocky Thompson's practices, and he's the, American League coach for Las Vegas now. And he had phenomenal, phenomenal practices. And I would just, at least once a week, whenever he had a day off, I'd go and watch. And it's amazing just what you pick up, you know, from drills to different things that they're critiquing in terms of stick position. And, you know, when you're actually sitting in the rink and listening to these guys. So I think that's one thing. I think you got to be organized. I think, you know, practice, I mean, the majority of your time is going to be spent in practice. So as coaches, you got to have a structure that keeps your guys moving, that you're working on skills. And like, I know for me, like over time, I've kind of created almost like a template, where I can slot different, you know, drills into. But, you know, the first, especially for minor hockey, I mean, these kids need to be on their edges. They need to be working on, skating, you know, with a puck, without a puck, going forward to backwards, getting on their edges, doing all these things, but you need to keep them moving. And, you need to be organized to do that. You got to have the drills in place and, you know, kind of everything in place so that you can do that. And I think the biggest thing now, the difference in the player, is they want to know the why. And I know you guys have talked about this before, but you know, back when we played, it was more, you know, the coach said this, so we're going to go do that. Now the players want to know, okay, why are we doing this drill in practice? Where do we see this in a game? Why are we forechecking this way? Why are we trying to, you know, all these things? And if you have an answer for every why, it helps the players buy in so much more, because they can understand, you know what? Yeah, I do see this a lot in a game. This is going to make a huge difference for me. So I think that's the biggest thing. And then ultimately it's accountability and, you know, holding your players accountable. But you got to create, you know, like I talked about at the top, it's that culture in place, and, you know, having measurables in place that you can try to quantify that for you. But a lot of things there, I know. And if you want me to kind of go more into other things, but I think it's the passion and the culture. It's, you got to be organized and have a plan. And then the players want to know why you're doing it, so your systems and your drills better make sense to what you're trying to accomplish.
That's awesome, man. And it's interesting, like the why comment that you made. I remember hearing a story about Barry Smith and Scotty Bowman when they were coaching those Red Wings teams with all like the huge talent that they had. You know, they have whatever 8 Hall of Famers on their team, and you know, the Russian Five and all that kind of stuff. And their why in teaching defense was that this is going to let us create offense. So like every single thing that they did was predicated on this is going to help us offensively. So it's like, hey, we need to do that, because they did the left wing lock, right? Which isn't this, we did it at Cornell. Like, this isn't the sexiest system to do. But because we're doing this, this is going to allow you to do this, this, and that. That's going to help us score more goals. You know, in the neutral zone, we're going to pull back a little bit because it's going to create turnovers, and then we'll get it and we can catch them in transition so we can score more goals. So like, it is kind of like a new school thing in terms of the why, but you look back to even the best coaches from, you know, even before, like they were doing that even before. John Wooden was huge on the why. Like, you read any of his books, he's always talking about philosophy. He's always talking about the why with his players. And, you know, he's probably the greatest coach in history of any sport, you know, 10 national championships in 12 years. It's pretty amazing. So, the why, I agree. Yep. It's so important. And once you figure out the why, I think it's much easier to be a coach and have passion for it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, you know, and I think a lot of the older coaches almost see it as disrespectful, because sometimes the players do come across as, you know, they come from the generation where they get answers right away. They Google something, they get an answer right away. And they, sometimes it can be viewed almost as disrespectful, and sometimes it may be, but at the end of the day, it's the coach needs to see it more as an opportunity to help the buy-in that much more. Because if these players can understand why they're doing something and how it's going to make them better, then, I mean, that's what you're going for, right? Like, I mean, forget
about it. Well, it also helps you become a better coach too, because now you have to explain your philosophies more. You have to like be more knowledgeable about the things that you're talking about. So when a player does ask you why, like, that's just going to make you even better as a coach too.
Right. And I think even more so, like, I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, I'm a big component of watching hockey. Jeff, I know you talked a lot about this. Like, as a player, you got to watch a lot of hockey because you can learn. As a coach, you watch a lot of games so you can get different ideas for structure, for everything, right? But I think you can't lose your why. Like, you, just because the Maple Leafs are doing a certain breakout or a certain forecheck doesn't necessarily mean that your players are, one, going to be able to execute it, and two, it's going to work within what you're trying to do. So it's always got to be, okay, that's good. Okay, how does that work within what we want to do? Our culture, the way we want to play, how can we implement this? Maybe it doesn't work. Oh, but it's a good idea. Maybe it does work. But you always have to kind of filter it. You can't just use it just because you saw someone at a higher level do it. You need to, it needs to be all about that culture, how you want to play, what your strengths are as a team. It all kind of goes into it. And I think the last thing is, as a coach, I mean, having our daughter, is you really need to, I mean, you talk about crazy hockey parents and, you know, all the time, but at the end of the day, they want what's best for their kid. And I think you need to view the kids that you coach as your own kids. And something that I've tried to do is always try to put myself, if that was my son that I'm trying to get through to, or, you know, how would I want the coach, you know, reiterating that to them? And I think if you can bring that level of care, where you try to make every decision through the lens of, if that was my son or daughter, how would I go about this? I think that resonates so much more, because I think, you know, like the saying goes, I mean, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And these players will go through a wall for you if they know that you have their best interest in mind and you're always doing the right thing for them. So I don't know if you guys have any comments on any of that, but just things that I've kind of seen over the course of time.
No. Trotter, on the same page, buddy. Love everything you're saying. You got great quotes here. I'm need to be taking notes right now. You're killing it. I'm loving it.
Well, you're going to take your notes on a tattoo. You're going to tattoo one of the things that you said. The way you do anything is the way you do everything.
Right on my forehead.
Well, Tronner, man, this was unreal. A lot of awesome stuff, dude. This was really cool. It's also cool to kind of go down memory lane with you too. It's been awesome to kind of keep in touch over these years and kind of going along. We had one of Jeff's teammates earlier this week in Jeff Lurg, and now have one of my teammates on here has been pretty special. So thanks a lot, man, for coming on here. This was awesome, and keep up the great work that you're doing up in Chatham, Ontario, man.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks, Toph and Jeff. Awesome being on, and would love to come back on if there's other stuff you guys want to talk about. You guys are doing great work, so thanks.
You bet, buddy.
Love it.
Go take care of that beautiful daughter of yours, and we'll talk to you again at some point pretty soon.
Will do. Thanks, guys.
See you, man.
Bye.